Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we actually began this story, The Birth of Yishmael, it was nearly 3 months ago when we did this. So I'm fairly confident that it would be worthwhile to review and go over the first step again. It's been a long time. For those of you who remember it, great. Review is extremely important, as I just mentioned, that the sages say that he who learns and does not review is as if you plant but do not reap or cut down the bounty of your produce. So review is a good thing. For those of you who do not remember from 3 months ago or who were not here, and this will be a nice start.
Didn't you call it something other than the birth of Yishmael before?
It's going to be a combination of the birth of Yishmael and the expulsion of Yishmael from Abraham's home. That's what we're going to be studying. It's both the combination of his birth and of his subsequent expulsion. And eventually this will lead into the story of the binding of Isaac, which will take place a few chapters later, but they're very much tied in, these two particular stories. So what we're going to do today is what we've done in the past, as we take and tackle each particular topic one at a time. We're going to go through just the verses this go around. I believe we should be able to get through all of them. This entire story is only 16 verses. Should be able to get through all of them. We'll raise a couple of issues, discuss a couple of points that the verses themselves, I particularly like to give you just the verses. We have no commentary on your sheets with you, not even Rashi, none of the other commentators, just to sort of see the verses as they are, get a handle of the story, raise some of the issues, and then we'll begin addressing them in subsequent weeks. Let us begin. Chapter 16, Visorai Eshes Avram Lo Yoldolo. Sarai, Avram's wife, bore him no children. So the Torah begins this particular episode by stating as a fact, Sarai, Avram's wife, had not had any children to him. Vela Shischa Mitris Ushma Hagar. And she had an Egyptian maidservant, and her name was Hagar. So we are told, as an introductory statement to this particular episode, Avraham and Sarai do not have any children. We are not told at this point how long they've been married for. We can assume it's been quite a number of years, but we do not have an exact number. We don't know when they got married, but that they do not have any children. And Sarai happens to have a maidservant. This maidservant happens to be Egyptian. That seems to be important to us to know, which otherwise would be an irrelevant piece of information. Who cares what her nationality was? The main point is that Sarai had a particular maidservant. But Sarai has a maidservant. She's an Egyptian. And her name was Hagar. Comments, questions, thoughts? Yeah.
Okay, so the maidservant is clearly labeled as being her maidservant. So it's up to Sarai to decide what to do with her.
That's what it seems like. That's correct. A good point. Right, it seems like the law shit chomitches, and to her there was an Egyptian maidservant, that this maidservant was Sarai. The Torah calls her Sarai. Her name had not yet been changed to Sarah. That will happen subsequent to this story. And it is up to her to decide what to do with this particular maidservant. Okay, let's move on. Vatomer Sarai el Avram. Sarai now says to her husband Avram, Hinei no atzaroni Hashem miladeth. Look, behold, Hashem has restrained me from bearing. Otsarani has held me back, has stopped me from being able to bear you children. Bo na el shifchasi. Please, the word na, either now or please, consort, bo, come el shifchasi to my maidservant. Ulai bonemi mena. Perhaps I will be built up through her. Vayishma Avram lekol Sarai, and Avraham heeded to the voice of Sarai. So Sarai without children, she has this Egyptian maidservant. She says to her husband, "Why don't you live with my maidservant, consort with her? Maybe I will be built up through her." And Avraham listens to the voice of Sarai, his wife. Questions, comments on this?
What does it mean to be built up through her?
Excellent. What in the world does it mean to be built up through her? We could ask this question in another way, a more simpler way. What kind of business is this? Sarai doesn't have any children. She wants to have children. So she says, here, take my maidservant.
Sorry.
And now what? So Avraham has children with the maidservant. What does that accomplish for Sarai?
Well, if the maidservant belongs to her, then the child would be.
So do you think that a woman who has not had a child and who wants a child will feel satisfied with raising the child of her maidservant? Will that answer her need, desire?
No, not me.
No.
On the contrary.
Right, no way. On the contrary, if anything, it might make it even worse.
Yeah,
right? So what is the practice that Sarai here, the Torah just goes, jumps right into this. Sarai doesn't have any children. We don't have any other dialogue between her and Abraham, other than she says to him, you know, we don't have any children. Take my maidservant. But she doesn't say that you should have children. What's the goal that Sarai states explicitly as to why she wants Avram to take her? Maybe I will be built up through her. What is the mechanism in place? What was she thinking that she would somehow be built up because Avraham lives with her maidservant and maybe they have a child? It would almost seem very strange, bizarre, that what are we missing that would seem to somehow accomplish anything?
Well, what would it mean in those days that she was barren? What would it mean to the community? What would it mean within the tribe that she was barren?
Well, there was no tribe at that time. She and Abraham were loners. They were by themselves against the whole world practicing monotheism. They had a following of people that they had brought under the wings of heaven, so to speak. But what it would mean in the larger sense is, not in terms of community or tribe, but in terms of the history of the Jewish people, Avram is the first to recognize the presence of God. He's out here preaching, teaching, getting people to follow, and he doesn't have anyone to follow in his mission. He doesn't have a son to take on the task and continue it. And if you recall from our previous topics that we've studied, Avram has been promised many, many, many times that he will have a child, that he will inherit the land of Israel, he will have children as numerous as the stars of heaven and the dust of the earth. So he knows there's this prophecy out there that he's received that he should have children, and he hasn't had any. So you can even put that in context. Who is the one who is more concerned right now about the fact that they don't have children? Avram or Sarai?
That seems to be fair.
Sarai seems to be more concerned. Why would it make more sense that she is more concerned than Avram?
She's the one you would expect that he would have the children with. She's his wife.
Say it the other way around. Who was promised children?
Avram.
Who was not overtly promised children?
Sarai.
So who says that prophecy would be fulfilled through Sarai? Avraham knows he's going to have children. Sarai knows she's going to have children with Avram. Sarai knows that Avram is going to have children, as numerous as the stars of the heaven and the dust of the earth, that these children will inherit the land of Israel. But she doesn't know that it's from her. She has a concern. She sees herself barren. They have a prophecy from God that the progeny will come. There will be a lineage that will continue from Avram. With whom? Sarai says, I want it to be me. And she says, here, take my maidservant. Maybe I'll be built up through her, which we as of yet don't understand how that's going to accomplish anything. What's Avram's response to Sarah's request? Okay. Yes.
She felt he needed some practice.
Raising a child?
Having a child.
All right, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. We'll see what there's a lot to be said about this. What's interesting about when Avram listens? How does the Torah describe Avram's listening?
He did the voice.
He did the voice. That's a funny way to speak. What should it have said?
Listen. Words.
Either the words or he just listened to Sarah. In other words, I listen to my wife. I don't listen to the voice of my wife. That would be a very funny thing if I said, I wore this suit because my wife suggested it and I listened to the voice of my wife. We don't talk that way. It's a funny way to speak. He listened to her. So would the Torah add something, which we'll see as we go on, specifically about the voice of Sarah? Yeah.
When they use the voice of Sarah, is that meant to be prophecy? Sometimes.
So the sages will see in that. In other words, the concept of the voice of Sarah as a reference, as opposed to just listening to her as a reference to the concept of prophecy. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. Let's see what happens in our story. Vatikach Sarai Eshes Avram. So Sarah, Avram's wife, took as Hagar HaMitzvah Shifchasal. She took Hagar, the Egyptian, her maidservant. Miketz Eser Shonim, after Avram had dwelt for 10 years, Lashavas Avram Eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan, Vatiteno Sola Avram Isha, she gave her to Avram, her husband, Lo Leisha, to be a wife. Very wordy pasuk. Let's speak that out again just in English, how we would say it on our own. After 10 years of living in Israel, so now remember, Avram and Sarah were married many years, still in the land of Haran, where Avram came from. Avram over there was given a prophecy, Lach lecha me'artzucha, leave your homeland, leave your father's birthplace, go to the Eretz Canaan, go to the land that I will show you, which of course turns out to be the land of Canaan, which has become of course the land of Eretz Yisrael. They're there for 10 years. Anyone remember how old Avram was when he left Haran? Close, yes.
Five?
Yes, excellent. You mentioned that a couple of times in the previous passage. Excellent.
I know that you shall be.
Avram's already 75 years old when he leaves Haran, and he's now living in Canaan for 10 years with Sarah without any children. When did they get married? Who knows? Were they 65? Were they 45? Were they 21? I don't know. But they were 75. Avram was 75 when he left. He's now 85, still working on the prophecy that you will have children as numerous as the stars of heaven, but none are forthcoming. Sarai, now 10 years into the land of Israel, says to Avram, take Hagar, my shifcha, my mitzris, my Egyptian maidservant, and he gives her to Avram, her husband, to be his wife.
Two wives, or he divorced her?
No, he does not divorce Sarah. There is no requirement to do so. There were certainly, a man was allowed to have many wives, even according to the Torah. That ban was a rabbinic ban against marrying more than one wife, which happened, if I recall correctly, somewhere between the years 300 and 800. In that window, I'm not sure exactly when. It was when Rabbeinu Gershom banned the concept of having more than one wife, but according to Torah law, there's no prohibition against that whatsoever, and certainly not this time. It was very common. This wasn't even a second wife. This is more like a concubine kind of wife, where it was the maidservant.
I've never seen it translated to be his wife.
Well, the word is le'isha. There's a Hebrew word is to be his woman, which is generally considered to be his wife. That's how it's generally translated. We can leave that translation open. I'm okay with that. But the word in the Torah is le'isha, that she was given to be his isha, which is certainly the word for husband wife.
Wife is an Egyptian, rather than, I guess there were no Jews, so there was no one else.
Okay, well, so now, so you, what you're raising, the Torah is clearly stressing that she was Egyptian. Why is it relevant or significant that she was Egyptian, and how did she become the maidservant of Sarah in the first place? Where did Sarah get her from? So we're going to see Rashi's going to comment on that. Rashi's going to comment that she was actually handed over to Avram and Sarah by Paro, the king of Egypt. That after Avram and Sarah had journeyed down there and had a whole episode where Sarah had been taken captive by the Paro because she was so beautiful, and all sorts of miraculous events took place in which she was given back to Avram and neither of them were harmed, the Paro said to his daughter Hagar, these people are so special, it is better for you to be a servant to them than to be a princess in my land. And so she was actually from royal lineage. She was the daughter of Paro, sent willingly by Paro. He gave his daughter to Avram and Sarah and said, you take her, better for her to be with you than to be with me. And this is the woman who is the maidservant of Sarah, who is in the character of our story.
Is that described somewhere in the woman?
That's where the sages describe that in the Medrash, based on the fact that it keeps being stressed that she was Egyptian. Why do we care that she's Egyptian? What's her lineage? And they have the tradition that that's who she was.
And in any case, all of this is no accident.
That's correct.
It's planned by
Hashem. Right. You got it.
For a reason.
You got it. Okay, let's go. We got a lot of stuff to do. Dalit. So we now have the story unfolding. Avram agrees to Sarah's words, and he takes Hagar as a second wife. Yavo el Hagar, he consorted with Hagar. Vatar, she conceived. Vatera ki harasa, and when she saw that she had conceived, Vatekal givirta be'eineha, her mistress was lowered in her eyes. Vatekal literally means became light. Like kaved is heavy, and means kavod means to honor, and kal means light, or to be lowered in one's eyes. So Hagar, this shifcha says, listen, my wife Sarah has been married to this guy Avraham for years and years and years and years. I'm with him one night, and I already conceived. And in her mind, her mistress becomes far lower. Sages will use it almost as if she said, yeah, she presents herself to the outside world as being such a righteous woman, but clearly, yeah, she's not so righteous because God has withheld from her children all these years, and I'm with this man just one night already, and I'm already with child. Now, did we or did we not expect her to conceive? Is this like, whoa, what happened here? Or is this not that's what's supposed to happen? Are we following the script so far?
Yeah.
Right? So, yes and no. We're following the script that the plan was for her to conceive. Sarah said explicitly to Avram, here, please, take my maidservant. Maybe I will be built through her. Clearly meaning you guys will have a child and somehow, which we don't understand yet how that will impact her, but the plan clearly was for her to have a child. And she does. She conceives. So that's according to plan. What would be the only part that we would say is not quite according to plan?
Her mistress.
The mistress lowered.
Correct. The way that Hagar now views her mistress, that part wasn't necessarily planned. That wasn't part of the plan. And we'll see now. So that's where we're up to so far. Vatomer Sarai el Avraham. Sarai now says to Avraham, verse 5, Chamasi Alecha. The outrage against me, Chamasi, the outrage, the Chamas, the hatred, the outrage that's against me, Alecha is on account of you. Anoichi Nosati Shivchasi Bechekecha. I was the one who gave my maidservant into your lap, literally, into your bosom. Vatera ki harasa, and when she saw that she had conceived, va'ekal beineha, I became lowered in her eyes. Yishvot Hashem beini uveinecha, let Hashem judge between me and you. Right, very interesting response.
Yeah.
Right, again, as we just one second, as we set up what we would have expected, we expected Hagar to conceive. That was the plan. She does. That part so far so good. Except that Hagar responds negatively towards Sarah in that she now views Sarah in a lighter or lowered fashion. Sarah now responds, and look at this response she has. The outrage, the chamasi, is due to you. What role does Avraham have in this?
Well, apparently he was paying more attention to Hagar.
So we don't know what. All we know is Sarah now puts the blame on Avraham for the mistreatment that she feels she's getting from her maidservant. She then says, I'm the one who gave her to you. And now look, I have become lowered in her eyes. Let Hashem judge between me and you. What's the judgment between Avraham and Sarah? Who's the judgment between?
Sarah and Hagar.
If anything, it should be Sarah and Hagar.
Yeah.
Or between God and Hagar. I don't know what, but where is Sarah coming in? What are we missing in the story? That she clearly has some type of complaint against Avram. That my humiliation, my outrage is directed or due to you. And then that Hashem should judge between me and between you. Has to be missing something in this story where she would respond thus. To Avram. Yeah, Jennifer, is something you wanted to say?
Sarah did everything she could to build Avraham up. She knows that he's supposed to have children. So that's what she said, the outrage is due to you. I gave the maid servant.
Oh, you're answering the questions.
Right. And so let Hashem judge between me and you. Look at how virtuous I am, and look at you. You know, I did so much for you.
Is it because Sarah has the ability of prophecy?
That what?
That if God judges between the two of them, she ends up with it.
Could be. But on just a surface level, just following the story, she has an interesting response to what's going on. Let's continue. Vayomer Avram el Sarai. Yeah.
It's natural that she would feel jealous in a way. Sarah would feel jealous that she's finding that she has a child, why don't you just...
Okay, but so this is the question. You know, you're raising an interesting point. In other words, did we expect or not expect Hagar to conceive and bear a child?
We expected
and expected. Did Sarah want Hagar to conceive and bear a child?
Yes. Yeah.
So, she might, now, if she does feel jealous about that, that would be just the reality of, even though what I wanted happened, even though that which I created happened, that I would still feel jealous. But that's, we're not getting hints of jealousy here. What are we getting hints of? That Hagar is feeling now exalted above Sarah because of the fact that she is conceived. Sarah says, this is unacceptable. And then what she does is she brings Avram in and says, this is because of you. Hashem should judge between me and you. And that's the part that we need to figure out. Why is she bringing up? Like, the story would have been perfect. The script would have made sense if she was saying, I can't take the way Hagar's treating me. That would have made sense. But why does she keep bringing Avraham into the equation? He hasn't done anything wrong. He's done exactly...
Well, we don't know that.
Okay, what we're missing in this story, we don't have anything in this story that he's done something that would warrant this particular response.
Right.
Yeah. Six. Vayomer Avraham el Sarah. So Avraham responds to his wife, Sarah, Hinei shif chosef biyodech. Listen, your maidservant is your hand. Lasi lo hatov beinayach. Do to her that which is good in your eyes. So Avram very interestingly says, she's yours. She's yours, maidservant. You're the one who gave it to me. You're the one who thought that you were going to be built up through her. Now you're not happy with the way the things are going, so do to her that which is good in your eyes. So Avram leaves it very open as to what there is to be done. Whatever you think is good in your eyes, you may do. Sarah takes it and treats her harshly. We are not told what she did. Vata'aneha is the lesson of Enoi, to afflict, taught her, treated her somehow harshly. Vativrach mipanel, so difficult, in fact, that Hagar flees. She takes off. She runs away. Literally leaves the house. Okay. There, we will get to that. In other words, the title of the class originally was The Expulsion of Yishmael from the House of Avram. But we're not there yet. The child has not even been born. She's pregnant with the child. She treats Sarah degradingly in her eyes. Sarah gets angry. Avram says, listen, she's your maidservant. Do with her that which you want. She treats her harshly. So harshly, in fact, that Hagar runs away. Vayimso Maloch Hashem al Ein Hamayim Bamidbar. An angel of Hashem found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, al Ha'ayin Biderech Shur, by the spring on the way to Shur. So the Torah gives us some specific locations as to where she was found, but that's tangential to the main point of the story. What's the text telling us? Hagar has now run, fled from the house of Avraham, pregnant with a child, and a maloch, an angel, finds her, and she's sitting by a spring of water. Why do we need to know that she was by a spring of water? Why do we need to know that it was on the way to the place called Shur? Torah does not tell us yet, but that's where she was, and she is, so to speak, found by an angel of Hashem, which is an interesting way of describing it. I would have thought it would have said an angel of Hashem appeared to her, specifically sought her out. The language of the Chumash is Vayim Tsa'am Malach Hashem. An angel of Hashem found her by this spring of water. So far, so good? No questions, right? We're all, this story makes, we got it. Yeah.
Spring sounds like it's a known place.
Okay, maybe we'll find that there is somehow connected to other stories in which it's a known spring. Possible. And water is certainly life. That is correct. 8. Vayomer Hagar Shitchos Sarai. And he said, quote, O Hagar, maidservant of Sarah, Amy Zevos, where have you come from? Ve'ona Seilechi, and where are you going? Very interesting questions. An angel of God finds Hagar. Finds her by a wellspring, calls out her by her name. Hagar, Shifchas Sarai. Hagar, maidservant of Sarai. Now, the fact that Hagar is now having communication with an angel, the sages are going to say is because she grew up in the house of Abraham and was accustomed to them. So we'll put that aside, that she's now having a dialogue with an angel. Does this angel know what's going on or not know what's going on? Well, he certainly knows who this person is.
But he has, absolutely, but now he has to have her repeat back to him so she knows what's going on. He has to have some knowledge.
Okay, so as we work through, he throws out to her, I know your name, I know who you are. You are Hagar, the maidservant of Sarai. But where are you coming from and where are you going? Two classic questions. Very often, you know, the commentators will pull things out of the text, out of the context, as far as lessons to us. These are the two classic questions, as if we are met up every day by an angel saying, Reb Chatzko, where are you coming from and where are you going? Two questions to always have in mind. Where am I coming from and where am I going? If we can't answer those questions, not just in a physical sense, well, I came from my office and I'm going to lunch after this. That's not what he's interested in. So where are you going? What direction are you headed in? What's the goal? What's the plan? But he asks Hagar these questions. Where are you going? That's how he emerged. She responds. Nipnei Sarai Gevirti, Anoichi Burachas. I flee from the face of, from before my mistress Sarai. That's who I'm running from. Anoichi Burachas. I'm fleeing, I'm running. And who am I running from? Mipnei Sarai Gevirti, literally from the face or before the presence of my mistress Sarai. Vayomer lo Malach Hashem, test 9. The Malach then responds and says to her, Shuvi el Gevirtech, return to your mistress. Vihisa ani tachas yodeha, and submit yourself to her dominion. Be afflicted. He doesn't say to her, go back. I'm telling you, I spoke with her. I worked it out. Don't worry about it. That's what he says. He says, return. And this is what you're going to have to deal with. He does not say to her, you know, by the way, this is your fault. You know that I was watching the whole thing, and remember when you started dealing with your mistress lightly? That was the cause of the whole thing. If you'll stop treating her that way, you won't have any problem. He doesn't say that to her either. He says, return and submit yourself to her dominion. V'hisa'ani tachas yadeha. You will be afflicted underneath her hand, literally. Submit yourself to her. But return to her. What's Hagar's response at this point? What do you think she's thinking?
Why?
Right? Why? Or why? Like what an interesting prophecy she receives from this angel. Think about her life over the last couple of weeks. She's just being a regular maidservant. All of a sudden, one day she gets a knock from her mistress Sarah and says, I have a mission for you. What's that? I want you to become the husband of Avram. The wife of Avram. Can you imagine her response at that moment? This is Avraham and Sarah we're talking about. These are the two great giants. And she's serving them humbly. And now she's told by her mistress that she should become Avram's wife? She should bear children from this giant? And then she conceives. Then she begins to think, no longer, who am I? She begins to think, who is Sarah? Look at what happened. And her mistress picks up on these new sentiments that she has. Again, when you follow her graph, princess of Egypt, maidservant of Abraham, wife of Abraham, begins to look down at her mistress Sarah. Sarah begins to treat her poorly. So poorly, in fact, that she can't take it anymore. She runs away. And then an angel of God finds her and says, I want you to return and continue. Like, not that you won't be treated this way. Not let me give you a piece of advice. Stop treating Sarah and Mitzvah. Just go back and you will be afflicted continuously. But that's what I want you to do. That's what he wants from her. Yeah.
That's where I noticed that it said an angel of God. And here it's an angel, not the angel.
Excellent.
I saw in the next few verses, it also says an angel.
Excellent.
So I'm wondering if it's a different one.
It does sound that way. When the Torah speaks that way, it would sound like as if she's being approached by different angels, that each angel has a different message. The first one has the message of, where are you coming from, and where are you going? And then another angel of Hashem says, return to your mistress and submit yourself. And now in the next verse is going to be yet still another angel with a different message. It does sound that way. It's a good point. Let's see the final. So in other words, so right now at the end of verse 9, so she's thinking, all right, I'm supposed to go back and submit myself. Verse 10, Vayomer l'malach Hashem, and again that phrase, as Dina just pointed out, and an angel of Hashem said to her, doesn't, if it would have been the same angel each time, it just would have said, and the angel said to her, and keep saying it as if we're being introduced to her, this introduced to the angel this first time, each time, and an angel of Hashem said. And the angel of Hashem said to her, Harba arba ezareich, I will greatly multiply your offspring. V'lo yisofer meirov, that they will not be counted for abundance. In English, you will have many, many, many children that will not be able to be counted because of their multitudes. I will greatly multiply your offspring and they will not be counted for abundance. You'll have so many they will not even be able to be counted. Is this promise somehow tied into her returning? But so she doesn't return. She says, no thanks. I had enough of that mistreatment. I'm just going to continue on.
And she does return.
She does return. Is this prophecy... So is this today's agenda is to throw everything out on the table to read through the story and raise up all of our questions. So this will be an interesting thing that we have after she's told to return. Then we have a prophecy that she will have a multitude of children. And now we have another prophecy, the fourth phrase, Vayomer l'malach Hashem, in Yud Aleph, Vayomer l'malach Hashem, and an angel of Hashem said to her, Hinoch harav v'yoladet bein, behold, you are with child, you will conceive. We're going to see when we go through this in depth, the grammar of this is very difficult, whether or not this is said in the future tense or the present tense. Hinoch harav v'yoladet ben. The simple meaning is that's in the future tense. You will conceive and bear a child. The reason why that sounds odd is because she's already pregnant. But the language implies actual future tense of that she will conceive and bear a child. V'karos shemo Yishmael. And you will call his name Yishmael. Hashem el onyech, because Hashem has heard your affliction/prayer. Questions, comments?
Yeah, I mean, this verse seems out of order. Don't you think?
Where should it have gone?
Well, I think it should have gone somewhere that after she already knows that she's conceived and she's pregnant, and we don't know until this verse that she's going to have a son, but it sounds like the angel is telling her that you are with child, you will conceive.
So this might play into...
Later?
Right, that would play into the fact that if it's in a future tense, then it's going to be certainly conditional upon her return, and only then will she actually conceive and bear a child. But what's this child? So the Malach is telling her what the name of her child will be, which is interesting. I don't believe at this point in the Torah we have ever had an instance where a child has been named by God. I believe this is the first one where... And we've had quite a number of lists of children, starting from Adam, who names his first child Cain, and then Hevel, and each one of those children are named by Chava. Kikonisi Yish Elokim, I've acquired man with God, or all the progeny that's listed from Noach's time, but we're never told that there was a prophecy as to what the name of the child should be as if God himself is naming it. This is the first child, I believe, that's actually prophesied in advance what his name will be.
And is it part of his name, El?
Yeah.
I mean,
Yishmael, that's what it says.
God.
Right, because Hashem has heard your prayers, your affliction. Now, what else is odd about that? There are two words that we use for out of our senses. We have five senses, of course. The two main ones that we perceive the world with, our eyes and our ears. What word is used to describe that which we use our eyes for in Hebrew?
Re'eh,
lir'os, to see, is a vision. And what do we use our ears for? Lishma, to hear things. What is Hashem saying? What is the Malach saying that God, how is God responding to the affliction that Hagar, or the prayer that Hagar has? He heard it. If all we had was a text in front of us, what would we have chosen? Which sense, so to speak, of God, even though he doesn't have any senses? Did God hear something or did he see something?
No, God
seen
the mistreatment.
Have we had any indication in the text that Hagar has supplicated or has said something to God?
No.
There is no indication whatsoever that she has communicated in any way with the divine to say, "Dear God, I am in pain, I am suffering, I am running from my mistress." If anything, what would be the one thing that we would have had in the text? That God saw what she went through because he sent an angel to meet her out there in the desert by the well and talk to her and communicate and send her back home. So isn't it interesting that the name that the angel says that we should name the child is Yishmael? For God has heard your affliction, or anyech, we'll have to translate the word anyech, either affliction or prayer. But we haven't had any indication of any communication, of anything we would say that he's seen, but not that he's heard. And especially if we're going to go with the future tense that you will conceive, what is the name Yishmael representative of that he's heard something when we don't have any indication of that? Your oil, or something like that. You got a seen. Your affliction more than you've heard, yeah.
Doesn't the yud in front of Yishmael say the future?
Future tense, excellent. You shall call his name Yishmael. Key, but then read the word. Yishmael, excellent point. That's a whole other discussion. You shall call his name Yishmael with the yud in front of the name, which gives the connotation of God shall hear or will hear. Why should you call him Yishmael? He, the pasuk continues, Shama Hashem. God has heard your prayer / affliction. So because of something which has happened, which we're completely unaware of, that God has heard your prayer, your affliction, you shall name his name not Shmael, God has heard, but Yishmael, God shall hear your prayer, your affliction. Yeah. You're giving an interesting suggestion.
Right.
That this would somehow be a reference that the prophecy of the name that's given now, even though it's said in the past tense, Kishoma Hashem, that God has heard already, is somehow tied into the future name, Yishmael. He will hear, but that's a suggestion, it's only a possibility, but it is of note that the prophecy being given now is that the name should be a future tense because of an event which has already happened, which we are completely unaware of.
Okay.
And you're adding a possibility that it will be a hint to a future event which will take place, in which God will in fact hear the voice of the child, which is what the Torah will say, that God heard the voice of the lad and spared him when he will eventually be expelled. All that's tied in, and that's why we're going to have to see them all together. Very, very interesting. In other words, there are really three episodes that we're going to be studying, as you really referenced this in the very beginning. This is the episode of the birth of Yishmael. We then have to use this to springboard into the expulsion of Ishmael, and then how that will tie into the binding of Isaac. So there are really three stories. This is part one of simply the birth of Ishmael, which is going to lead into the story of the expulsion of Ishmael. But we can't talk about the expulsion until we understand who it is that we're talking about. But yeah, all of these things will tie in together. So you're just going to have to hold those three stories in your head for the next 3-4 months, and we'll be fine. Okay, let's finish the last couple of minutes. Let's finish off the main story here. The Huya Paradom, so this is still part of the prophecy. You will conceive, you will bear a son. You will call him Yishmael, and he will be a para adam. He will be a wild man. He will be uncontrollable. He will be untamed. Yado bakol, his hand will be against everyone. Viyad kol bo, and every man's hand will be against him.
That's really a lot of nachas.
A lot of nachas, yeah. Right, but is there any phrase in the Torah which can more aptly describe the nation of Yishmael today, thousands of years after this was said? Para Adam, a wild, untamed man. Yodo Bakol, his hand will be against everyone. Viyad Kol Bo, and every man's hand will be against him. What a prophecy that said thousands of years prior. The Alpnei Kol Echav Yishkon, and in the face of all of his brethren, he will dwell. We'll have to see what exactly that phrase means, that he will dwell in the face of all of his brethren. What does that mean? But this is the prophecy that Hagar is given for the child that she will bear, whose name will be Yishmael. He will be a wild man. He will be against everyone. Everyone will be against him. He will dwell in the face of his brothers. A very vague phrase, what exactly that third part of the prophecy means. Batikra Shem Hashem Adiver Eloha, and she called the name of Hashem that spoke to her. Now again, she was speaking with an angel, but she calls the name of God Himself who spoke with her. Ata Kel Roi, you are the God of vision. Ki Amra, for she said, Hagam Halom Raisi Achare Roi. Very cryptic phrase. Could I have seen, even here, after having seen? Hagam halom ra'isi, could I have seen even here? Acharei ro'i, after having seen. Completely cryptic. What? I don't even know how to translate that into plain English. What does it mean? But what I will point out is that A, the pasuk tells us she names God at this point. She gives a name to God, which means she's naming a certain attribute. What is the attribute that she's naming? Excellent. God's ability to see, that God sees, and then she ties it into, I can't believe that I have seen you. So going both ways, she names God the God of vision, that you have clearly seen me, and then she states, and somehow let's put into a very loose translation of, I can't believe that I have been able to see you. But again, I'll stress, here we have a very interesting interplay between these two faculties, the ability to hear and the ability to see. She names God, you are the one who sees, you're the God of vision. But what does the angel say she should name her son? The God of hearing, that God has heard your supplication, He's heard your affliction, He's heard about you, and therefore you call your son Yishmael, even as she's naming God, the God of vision. Yeah.
If you translate this, Hagam Halom Raisi, it doesn't translate like what they've written here. It says, to me it translates, also I had seen a vision like I dreamt this before, and now I see it. I don't see that this translates properly in English, and now I understand better if I read it that way. Does that, do you see what I'm saying?
How we read it again? Hagam Halom Raisi.
I saw this, also I dreamt this. This is something I've also dreamed, and now, afterwards, I actually see it. So she, in other words, she had a vision of this before. To the way I understand it, she had a vision of this before, and now she sees it as coming true.
You're translating halom as more of a vision of a dream, like a halom. Okay, I'm not enough, I don't know. But we will look into some. This will be one of our points as we go through this again in depth as to like how do we translate, what is the statement that she's making? Why is she A, naming God the God of vision, and B, what is her statement of, some cryptic statement of, I'm able to see after I've seen? Okay, let's move on. Yudalit al-Kain karola ba'er l'chai roi. Therefore, that well was now called the well of the Lachai Roi, the well of the living one, appearing to me. So that name that she gives God, the name of Kel Roi, becomes part of the landscape. The name of the well now becomes name as of the name of the Lachai Roi, the living one who appeared to me. Hinei Bein Kadeshu Bein Barnet. If you want to find out where that is, the Torah gives us the location. It's between the places of Kadesh and Barnet. Vatelet Hagar Avram Bein. And Hagar bore Avram a son. The Torah then skips back. She returns home. Doesn't tell us anything about what that meeting was like. What was her initial response to Sarah? What was her initial response to Hagar, to Avram? But she has a son. Now we're going to have to go back again. Was the prophecy of the angel that you'll conceive a second time? Or is this the son that she had originally conceived and carried with her? We're going to leave that blank. We'll have to see what the sages have to say about that. But either way, she bears a child to Avram. Vayikra Avram Shem Beno Asher Yolda Hagar Yishmael. And Avram names the son that Hagar gives him Yishmael. What a phenomenal coincidence. Isn't that amazing? It is interesting, right?
Yeah.
Who was told about the name of the child?
Hagar.
Now, we have to say one of two or three possible things at this point. Either Hagar communicates to Avram that she received a prophecy that the name should be Yishmael, and the Torah records it as if Avram gave the name, even though it was Hagar who told him that from the angel. But the Torah says it was Avram who named the child Yishmael. So either Hagar communicated that to Avram, and we're simply not told about that. But Hagar had said, Avram, you're not going to believe what happened to me when I was out there by the well. An angel came to me, we had this dialogue, he told me to return, and he told me to name the son that I'll have Yishmael. A distinct possibility. Or Avram had a prophecy on his own that he should name the child Yishmael, and we're not told about that. Or Avram happened to name the child Yishmael for a separate reason, and it happens to be the same. I don't know. The Torah simply says Avram is the one who named the child, and it was Hagar who would receive the prophecy that that should be his name, and the name is exactly the same, Yishmael. Avram ben Shmonim Shnavishesh Shonim Beledes Hagar Yishmael LaAvram. Avram was 86 years old when Hagar bore to him this son Yishmael. Avram being 86. We know how old was Avraham when he received the prophecy that he would have another child with Sarah, and together with that prophecy came the commandment of circumcision. How old was Avraham when that prophecy happened?